This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Urban Dreaming with the Rummy and Little Ladies. It's time for dreaming.
What kind of dreaming?
Urban dreaming.
Finding your voice, finding your spirit.
No matter where you are, no matter where you go.
Joy 94.9.
Yes, you're on Urban Dreaming 94.9. This is Sarami on the mic and my special guest for the evening, Kamara Bell-Wykes. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm pretty excited, actually, because I know this lady as well. She's a good friend of mine and just very proud of her because she's doing some really amazing things, not only with the community but with the world.
So, thank you, sir. That's very kind of you to say.
Just so you know, guys, we're going to be going till 12 midnight tonight, and we've got a bit of a yarn happening in regards to what Kamara is actually doing with her life.
And oh my God, that sounds deep. Sounds
yeah.
Like going in deep.
We're going to be, and just know that it's something that it's called Accelerate, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Itself. Yeah.
You're actually off to the UK.
Yes, I am. I know London's ready for it.
Yeah, I think they are, because they're going to be, like... There's this program. Can you tell us a bit more about what the Accelerate is to begin with?
Sure. It's a program that is run by the British Council and Australia Council. And it's been going for about, I think, 7 or 8 years. And every year, 6 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander participants from across the country in all different art forms, like from architecture to cartoons to theatre, get selected to go and spend 3 weeks in the UK. And it's a leadership program, so it's about developing leadership skills within your fields and within your community. And you go and do placements with a range of different organisations that are best matched for the kind of practice that you're doing. And you just go and get to meet lots of awesome, I don't know, what do they call themselves? POMs? British people? Yeah. So, you know, I guess I should probably educate myself a little bit more before I go about all the colloquial terms and whatnot, but it'll be an exciting experience.
Well, speaking of terminology, that's also something we've been discussing actually for the last week with each other. Through Ubidgeri Theatre. So for those who don't know, Kamara is actually also works at the Ubidgeri Theatre as...
My official role is the Education and Learning Manager of the Margook program at Ubidgeri.
Yes, and so what she has done is she's created a template for all the educational systems in order to understand the right protocol, how to go about things, how to say the right things. Oh, not so much, you know, like there's so much things that are generally, I guess, misinterpreted or ways of saying things that you don't. A lot of people haven't had the education with, and it's in order for us to go into the schools and teach, I guess, the proper terms or proper ways of saying things without actually offending, isn't it? Basically, that's what it's sort of the nutshell.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of glossaries out there of appropriate and inappropriate terminology. And, I mean, it's a constantly changing canvas. It's certainly not something that stays finite by any means. That is one kind of element of one of the workshops. I suppose the main aim, what we were doing last week, was a creative development for a school workshop series, which will be a range of workshops using sort of drama and performing art skills to help students and educators engage with Indigenous concepts within the classroom in sort of a meaningful and respectful way, because even though it is on our curriculum, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander histories and cultures, a lot of non-Indigenous educators really struggle with how to incorporate it into the classroom. So these workshops are just another kind of attempt to make that a little bit of an easier experience and to ensure that we are the ones that, you know, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community are the ones that are sort of not dictating but providing input into the voices and the experiences that students have in the classroom.
Yeah, so important. I think, and the fact that we had, there was about four of us. There was me, yourself, there was Jack Shepherd and Lisa Mazza.
Yeah.
Having to, I guess, break down also a template that you and Cheryl Lee Hood sort of created together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, we had many moments of what's working, what doesn't, you know, and we have to completely break down everything you sort of, I guess, made a foundation of in the beginning.
Yeah.
And have to take on these new elements and obviously new ideas from other co-devisors.
Yeah.
And having the idea of, I don't know, I think we all sort of eventually came to a point where it's like, wow, there's so much more you can do just one simple idea to break it down into many other branches.
Yeah, that's right.
It's quite interesting, the process, wasn't it?
It's quite endless. And I think really in hindsight, I mean, it would be great to get another week in the room just so that we could have some more time to go deeper into the concepts, because I feel like we kind of were just starting to scratch the surface. So, you know, potentially there'd be more space for more development and certainly some time in the classroom with kids to kind of get their input into the kind of experience that they want to have as well.
For sure. Now, you're a big Prince fan, aren't you?
I am a big Prince fan.
Yeah, I knew that.
Everybody knows that.
So we're going to play a song from Prince and we'll get right back to you. Stay tuned, guys.
Hi, this is Alfie Akuri. You're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
Bam! Urban Dreaming. The time is now 11:17 and we'll be here till 12 midnight. And I've got my special guest here with me right now, and her name is Kamara Bell Wikes. She is the descendant of the Jagara and Batula people of southeast Queensland, and she first became a member of Ubidri in 1999. And Ubidri is the actual Aboriginal theatre here in Melbourne based on Blackwood Street.
Yeah, that's right.
And since then, she's served on the board and worked in administration and project management roles. And she's also written a number of Ubidri's health educational shows, such as Chopped Liver, Body Armour, and Northwest of Nowhere, and received the prestigious Green Room Award, Gerda Nicholson Emerging Actress Award, in 2003 for her role in Anne in Stolen.
Oh man, I've got to update my bio.
But there's also, you're mentioning you've done some work, you've done an educational degree actually in the Northern Territory.
Yeah. I headed up to Batchelor, which is a little town an hour south of Darwin. It would have been like 2007 actually. It was when Chopped Liver was just about to go on the road, and I enrolled into an education degree at Batchelor Institute of Indigenous Tertiary Education, which is the only Indigenous university in Australia, which has been around for, like, years. Sort of it recently merged with CDU, which was, you know, a little bit unfortunate, but was lucky enough to get my education degree there and did a bit of teaching and youth work across a few different communities in the NT, and then came back down to Melbourne about 2 years ago.
Oh, you must be homesick too.
Well, that's not my home.
But you know what I mean? You still make a home of where you go, but
I don't know. I'm one of those, like, you know, rolling stone gathers no moss kind of people a little bit. The one place I do miss is Melbourne, and I miss my country. You know, I've got to go home to Queensland one day.
Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, I love Darwin for its weather. For starters,
yeah.
And Queensland, because Queensland's just got this, it's, you know, the tropical weather, you know, it's something I'm used to, because that's the Kimberleys, it's the same way. I feel like I'm talking to a microphone, not to you, it's like blocking my view
we're making eye contact across the room.
I need to look at you.
Sorry, look at me.
We should dim the lights as well.
Yeah, where's the candles? My God.
Actually, this is a gay radio station, Kamara.
Oh, well, you know.
But no, you're right. Have a little bit of play fluidity, you know, nothing wrong with that. So, guys, just, I wanted to know that I've actually got a really amazing guest in my studio. I cannot express enough the work that she's doing right now is going to be something that's going to blow the world away, and I think it's something that's just the beginning. Do you feel that fire spark?
I definitely feel like I'm on the kind of crest of some pretty awesome momentum at the moment, and I'll give you that $50 later for talking me up, so definitely on the radio.
No, it's pretty crazy, but, you know, and you're so modest, and I think it's like even when, like you see the, like we had a workshop afterwards, showing the after work of what we'd done in that week.
Yeah,
and how
yeah.
Ibidri, you know, were just blown away by the concepts of what you were bringing out.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to work, the fact that we're going to be changing youth's perspective and to try grow and develop their understanding of Aboriginal culture is so important, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, I mean, it certainly feels like a lot of the stuff is kind of groundbreaking, which in a sense is a little bit like, oh, whoa, because, you know, you don't know what is the right way, what is the wrong way. I mean, you certainly have your instinct and your sense of what is, but as, you know, time moves on and things shift within society, stuff that, you know, we maybe couldn't have done 10 years ago, we're now in a space that we can start doing things that weren't done before. So we're constantly progressing and we constantly have to be kind of proactive and forward thinking and about how we're creating change. And I certainly think that education of our young people is the way to go. And it's not just for their benefit and their ability to understand better, but, you know, it's for our benefit as well. Like, it's for everyone. And I think that there's kind of so much separation in society at the moment, and media and things like Facebook create that divide even more than what they used to. And even though they're great platforms for communication, it can also become a platform for a lot of separation. And I just think that for us to move forward as a collective consciousness, we've got to start realizing that we're actually all just, you know, we're all in it together.
Exactly. And the children are our future. That's just the plain truth.
Yeah.
And without showing a good example to the youth, you know, because they learn from us,
yeah.
You know. And
yeah.
And it's about us passing on knowledge and passing on wisdom.
Yeah.
And also respect, because I think respect is the biggest thing that a lot of the kids these days are actually losing.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's true. And I think also, I mean, you only know what you know. And you only know what you've been taught. So you can't expect people to have or other viewpoints unless they have the opportunity to experience those perspectives. And then this is where you start to create shifts in people's thinking and understanding, you know. And it's not enough to just say it's not right to do that, or it's this is the way things are supposed to be done. People need to understand from an internal point of view why, you know, why things need to be done, or why that we should be why they should be embracing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture, why justices need to be fixed in this country, why society is the way it is. It's not enough to just say because we said so. It needs to come from an internal place of understanding, you know, and that only happens through education and experience.
Exactly. And also, I guess it's also allowing the freedom as well for these kids to explore and to understand that. With this freedom of thinking as well, because it's a new age, it's a new era,
yeah,
and a lot
yeah.
of these kids, they're highly intelligent,
yeah.
and it seems to happen to each generation that they just get more and more smarter.
Yes.
And we've got to somehow give them direction, but also make it fun, because that's
yeah.
the other thing. A lot of these kids are so advanced to the degree of just getting bored really quickly.
Yeah.
I find that.
Yeah.
And that's something we need to learn how to I guess, create more of a, I don't know, an impetus to make it happen, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
But the reason why I'm sort of wanting to just discuss this more is because with the Accelerate, people don't understand the Accelerate program, how actually groundbreaking it is going to be, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll give you a little bit of a background to Accelerate, because Accelerate is designed to provide Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people working with the creative industries with the skills and networks to generate, take up and excel in leadership positions. The program is aimed at Indigenous and professionals from all across Australia who have at least 5 years' experience in the creative industries and can demonstrate a bold vision to where they want to take their career and the communities. Now, alongside of you, there's actually, I think it's 5 others.
Yeah.
So we've got Gilda Andrews, we've got Travis DeBries, Glenn Isiga Pilkington, Francois Lane and Jonathan Saunders. And you guys actually went on a little trip just recently, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We went out to Common Ground on Tonnerong Country.
And let us know more about that.
So that was sort of a three-day kind of bonding, getting to know you kind of experience, but also an opportunity to sit down with a facilitator from England by the name of Mark Wright, and he works with like major companies like, you know, Nokia and English Post and like huge multi-corporate kind of organisations doing leadership development and group team building work and making companies run better. And we have the privilege to sort of have him for 3 days and really just kind of unpacking, I suppose, the innate qualities that we have, both good and bad, talking about what leadership looks like, you know, what kind of leaders we see ourselves to be. And it was just a great opportunity to kind of really take stock of the tools that you're carrying around in your suitcase and work out if things are, you know, still working for you. Maybe certain behaviours have become outdated. Maybe there are new skills that you're wanting to develop. And, I mean, you're just often in the pace of things. You know, you're so busy with life and work and just getting everything done that to actually take the opportunity to really have a look at the way that you're engaging in different situations and how you're kind of presenting yourself, representing yourself and your organisation in that space was, you know, it was a really amazing opportunity. You know, I learnt a lot about myself. I learnt a lot about myself in a really short amount of time, and I walked away from it feeling really empowered and I suppose having a better understanding about what steps I can take in my own leadership development.
We're forever learning as human beings, and isn't it crazy how much you can learn, even though you think you know yourself well enough?
Yeah.
There's always this thing of, what, there's more?
Yeah,
there's all these layers.
Definitely. And, I mean, you know, as you probably know, when you hit that kind of, I mean, 35 for me was a huge turning point in, I suppose, just life and understanding myself and the things that I want and actually actively putting stuff in place to go out and get them. And I just feel like everything's kind of uphill from there, you know?
It's a bit of a struggle at times, but...
Seriously, looking at me, his eyes are glazed over.
Like, it can be a struggle, but I think to also, you know, I really wanted to mention that we've got someone who's really predominant in the industry, someone who's Lydia Miller, the Executive Director of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Arts in Australia Council. She says keeping culture strong is one of the most universally important human endeavours. It requires recognition and support for the Indigenous cultural leadership and investment in development of vibrant communities. Now, this lady, she's been a leader for, far out, for over 20 years easily.
Yeah, be careful what you say.
You know what I mean? Predominantly just someone who's always been a leader in the arts. And to have her, that speech she made that night about, you know, passing on knowledge, and the fact is this is what it's all about.
Yes.
You know, and there's only so much, only so far, I guess, or in age that we have, and we think to ourselves, you know, if you've got something that's really, I guess, an experience in your life that you can pass on to another or some form of knowledge or understanding, it's vital that we pass it on, you know. And because people don't understand, with Aboriginal culture as well, a lot of us have had things where we're not allowed to talk, we're not allowed to say certain things. But I noticed that throughout the generations, obviously, you know, because we're coming to contemporary times as well,
we are
really realising how important it is to keep passing on knowledge. And to a certain degree, of course, you've got to have, there's law, there's two different forms. And the Aboriginal law is about, you know, keeping things safe as well. And I guess with our knowledge that we pass on, we've got to, you know, there's a certain degree of safety that we have to, you know, in order to say something. We have to sometimes beat around the bush, literally, in a sense, to say, look, there's only so much I can tell you. But that personal experience, we can't just, we can't all live that personal experience, you know what I mean? And a good example of that is today I went onto a Facebook, one of my friends, she posted, it was a bit of, it had a racial vilification about a young boy who had dressed himself as Nick Nanui from
yes,
West Coast.
Yes, I've seen the story, yep.
Yes, and he was a young boy, I think he was only 10 years old.
Yeah, I think he was about, potentially a little bit longer. I think he's a bit younger maybe.
Yeah. And we, you know, he idolised Nick and he wanted to become him, and it was a fancy dress-up party, and he had the opportunity through Book Week to dress up and... to he wasn't happy with just his skin being white, though. Mm-hmm. He had the dreadlocks, he had the jersey on, but he just didn't feel right, and he wanted to be painted up, and his mother was very hesitant about it.
Yeah.
And I think what happens was she said, you know what, it's what my son wants, so I painted him up. And she said, I didn't want to go for the extreme over-the-top blackface black. I wanted to just, you know, make him a little bit darker than what he was, so she added more of a brown tone to him. And that evening he won the competition.
Yeah.
Which is really... I guess now you look at it from a perspective of being an adult and being a child. So the child is, you know, he's a kid, he imagines things, and he wants to, you know, he just wants to play dress-ups, you know. And then there's this, once the mother's posted on Facebook, she's like, look, I really love what happened in regards, I wasn't sure, but my son won and I was really proud of him. And, you know, and I think there's a part of that mother, sort of motherly love, like she actually really enjoyed the fact that she can have her son live in, you know, like live his dream and live a character that he wanted to become.
Yeah.
So for you, like as an adult though, and when you think about other people who had a message, like there was always this racial, I guess the vilifications came out from there onwards.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have a, you know, I've tried not to give too much attention to issues like this because I, again, think that this kind of stuff becomes a huge distraction to what's really going on in the world and where we should be putting our energy. And I think that it becomes, things get so blown out of proportion, that's all anyone's talking about, and it does end up becoming this separation thing. I do kind of question what her agenda was by posting it to quite a public blogger's wall, because certainly as an adult, I think she has to have been aware of the stuff that's happened in the media recently. It's not the first incident of blackface that we've had in, you know, Australian media. We had quite a few incidences happening in a row. And so I kind of also feel that, you know, there's a lesson behind, because when... I suppose this relates a little bit to the protocols document that we're working on at Albidgery. We often get inquiries from educators that have students that they want to study Aboriginal players in the classroom, and often, like shows like Stolen, they don't have any Indigenous students in the classroom. They want to put on the show because they really love the story and they feel the story should be told. But they feel that it's not appropriate because they don't have any Aboriginal students. Now, my kind of argument is that within the classroom context, I think that it is appropriate, if it's done respectfully and truthfully, then there is a space for non-Indigenous students to be playing Indigenous roles within a classroom context. But at the same time, I don't think that it's necessary for them to change the colour of their skin to be able to play the truth of that character. And I think that there is an issue with it becoming a little bit of a caricature when we look at the historical context of blackface that's happened. And it could have been a teaching moment for that mother to that child. Now, and also for the school who, you know, gave him the award, and obviously he was really proud of himself. On the other side of the coin, I don't think that it's it's a really horrible experience for this young boy now, who's going to become really confused about whether he was doing the right thing or not. But then I do think the accountability lays at the mother's feet, and then I certainly don't think that the way that the media just blows it up into this huge thing, and also the way that kind of everyone goes on Facebook, nobody's winning from any of that. And then meanwhile, in the real world, we've still got all this stuff that's going on that suddenly we're distracted from. So I suppose that's kind of my viewpoint. And I just honestly believe that the more energy and attention we give issues, we get more of that. That is the experience that we keep on recreating.
But this is why a sense of me thinks that it's great, though, because a bit of controversy causes awareness. And there is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people who don't understand a lot of these things that are going on. A lot of people are just plainly ignorant, and other people are educated and have this sense of wanting to be keyboard warriors and, you know, and to educate. And it's interesting because I also had my say in this post, and I actually said, look, I'm an Aboriginal man of 20 years as a dancer who has had the opportunity to dance on ceremonial as well as a general performance, you know, in, say, you know, something like Welcome to Country, for example. or just a general dance production. And a lot of the times I paint myself in ochre. And my main basis of colour that I use is white ochre, and mm-hmm. I use white throughout my whole body. Because what it does is it represents neutral balance. There's no representation of any symbols or any, because a lot of these symbols are very traditional, going back to the, you know, past generations, from hundreds of thousands of years ago, actually.
Yeah.
And a lot of them represent landscapes, general symbols of dreaming and ways or animals that they represent as well, totems as such. So I guess it's a little like a safety net in a sense, but it also represents spirit. And I guess when I paint myself, I connect to my ancestors. It's my process that I get into. When I put that paint on my body, it makes me transcend from human to spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet it's not looked at in the sense of being, oh, there's a black man painting himself as white. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I guess that's because we have that cultural understanding, but there will be people who might go, oh, who's this person think he is painting himself as a white man, for example.
Yeah.
And you know, it can be offensive, but it's also quite interesting, I find, you know, because it can either really blow out of proportion and
yeah.
people can go, you know what, this is just like, and then you don't understand, blah, 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 or you can completely just turn it around and use that as an educational, you know, tool. And that's why I find interesting what you do as a not only an actor and a writer, but it's about you can educate people through the system, and you can do it in ways where it's you know, it's through the arts, and I think
yeah.
that's why it's important we have the arts as a platform.
Yeah,
you know, because a lot of people don't like to be spoken to directly.
No, and you don't learn things just by being told. Like, and this, I suppose, is a good example of what I was trying to reference before. Just by telling someone someone that something is wrong and that they can't do it doesn't make them understand why they can't do it. So they'll do it because they've been told that they can't.
Exactly.
But they don't know why they're doing it. So it's not coming from an internal place of understanding that is interpreted as hurtful and offensive. It just comes from a place of we got ripped apart on Facebook. And I, you know, and like I said, I just think that it's a shame, because now all we see is more separation, continued separation within the community. And I'm talking, you know, across black and white, and it all just plays out in really nasty ways. And I don't think anyone walks away feeling good about it. And I'm certainly not saying that you know, that mum made the right decision or any of that stuff. But I just don't think that it's warranted. I have to turn my brain off to it sometimes, brother. It's just too much, because it's just. Isn't there other stuff going on in the world? I don't know.
Well, there is, you know, and it's a shame. But, you know, like we said, that young kid's going to be tarnished, you know, hopefully not for the rest of his life, but it would be nice for him to grow up and go, oh, there's me just dressing up and playing another dress up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and listen, I think that if he'd gone in the dreadlocks and in his footy colours and said, this is who I am, his costume would have been just as good, because he would have been playing the truth of the lad. I don't think it was necessary for him to do that, and I understand why people take fault with it. I can understand why. As a kid, you'd want to do that, and it's just one of those things that you kind of go, oh. You could talk about it until the cows come home, but I mean, it what's done is done now.
And you know, in the end, we're all human beings, and we all bleed the same color.
Yeah,
that's exactly true, isn't it? All right, guys, the time is 11:39, and yeah, getting deep and meaningful with Kamara Bell Wikes
Monday night.
Don't you love it? All right, guys, stay tuned. You're on Joy 94.9, and this is Urban Dreaming.
Joy.
And, of course, Uncle Archie Roach there with A Child Is Born. Such a beautiful singer, isn't he?
Yeah.
Uncle Archie. Just amazing. And, you know, he's just come out with a new CD, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great. He's working. He's just done a video clip as well with all the Dungala Kwai kids. That's through the SBO company, Short
okay.
Black Opera.
Yeah, and where's them from? Where are those kids from?
Well, the Dungala. Well, that's a mix of all these kids from all around. And they
right,
get together
okay.
to form the one choir. And generally a lot of the mob are, for, you know, like, because they come on tour too for our show Pecan Summer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is what we take away. We're actually taking that to Sydney Opera House on the 3rd. We leave on the 3rd and we perform on the 14th of September.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, get your tickets while you can, guys, because that's one show that's going to be selling really fast, because it's only one night.
Wow, that'll be amazing.
Yeah, and you know
and
what else?
What are you doing, that thing? Dance?
I dance in it. I do the prelude. I actually I dance for it. I play Dunupan, the snake.
Right, yeah.
And I dance with Gamuka, who's the old woman who's digging for yams. And basically the story is about how the snake creates the land and all living, you know.
Beautiful.
Lines in this country landscape. And the Gamuka, she digs and she creates all the crevices and all the openings towards country. Quite amazing. And the Opera House is also there giving us a lighting special effects as well for this next show.
Yeah,
so it's
okay.
Actually three-dimensional
wow.
Light effects they're going to be using, and they're going to put it throughout the whole ceiling of the like stars, like
wow.
In the sky on
yeah.
Top of the roof of Sydney Opera House.
So is it the first time that it's been performed at the Opera House?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
And this is the first Indigenous opera show, for those who don't know, with Deborah Cheatham.
Yes.
Pretty amazing work. And I think it's like the ensemble itself is like over 58 people or something.
Yeah, fantastic.
It's huge. And, yeah, speaking of exciting times, you're also going to the UK, and then you're going to be travelling from there, and you're going to check out some of the country in Europe, eh?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't even got any plans. I'm just going to go where the wind takes me.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And where are you going to go?
Well, I'm definitely going to go and check out Paris because I want to go and see Jim Morrison's grave. I'm not really worried about the Eiffel Tower or anything like that. And I want to go and see some French hip-hop because I love French hip-hop. I don't understand what they're saying, but I love their accents. And they've got, like, awesome flows, you know. And then when I finish the Accelerate program, I think I'll start in Amsterdam and see where I end up. I've got 2 weeks, so I've never, like, I've been a mum for 16 years, and I've never travelled so far by myself for so long. So I'm getting to do all that, like, early 20s travel now that I'm mature and ready for it.
We were discussing this before, and how somehow the stars are aligning in perfect time for you right now.
Yes.
So it's awesome. Speaking of stars, we have on the line right now with us. Oh, she just disappeared. Oops, we'll get her back on hopefully before we close tonight. So that's Serena. She's all the way from the Kimberleys. But yeah, I think it's only 11:56, guys. There's not much time left, unfortunately. We did have a moment where there's a bit of dead air, and I'm so sorry.
Apologize. The technology has been giving Suri a really hard time tonight, guys.
And I thought I was doing the right thing, but it just keeps something's going on with me and computers. I tell you now. It's terrible. But my niece was going to talk a couple of things about generally what's going on in the Kimberleys. And she did mention the welfare card jury still out in the East Kimberley cashless welfare cards situation because there are conflicting reports about the effectiveness of cashless welfare cards in the East Kimberley, with some reporting a decline in binge drinking and others claiming there's been dirty dealing and rorting going on. It's crazy, but this has been going on for quite a long time in the Kimberleys.
Yeah, I mean, and I was in the NT when they first rolled out the basics card up there. I mean, and it was funny because, you know, not too many people were saying anything outside of the Aboriginal community when it was only affecting Aboriginal people. But once they started bringing it in, because they did actually roll it out across the broader community as well, and I tell you, there were a lot of people that had things to say when they were getting affected by it too.
Mm.
I mean, listen, my biggest issue with it is, again, that there's no education. It's just about telling people, we are going to control you and tell you this is what you need to be doing, rather than actually looking at what are the causes for, you know, alcohol consumption, binge drinking happening in community. It just means people leave communities and go to bigger cities where they can buy more alcohol there, and then you get issues of people drinking in public. And on top of that, you know, when I was working out in Goombalanya in the Northern Territory, because they don't necessarily, the community store is so expensive, and then, you know, local mob are having to spend how much money to get into town to be able to actually use their basics card, there are flaws in the system. And if there's no proper consultation on how to do it, you know, it's just not the right way to be going about things, and they need to find more deeper fixes for things than just saying, well, guess what, we're going to be like Big Papa again, doling out your pocket money to you, you know. So, I mean, that's my personal viewpoint on things anyway.
Well, you know, a lot of the residents are deeply resentful of the scheme, and they're saying that it's quite patronising and unfairly targeting Aboriginal people. And it's crazy, isn't it? Like, we had this discussion only just last week about how, you know, we are so typecasted and so put in a box, in a sense, to become something that we've been, I guess, completely being told or being pushed by the government to say that we are a certain type of thing or people, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's really not showing who we really are as and how much we excel as well. It's the media and how they're completely changing, I guess, turning around things on us in a sense. You know?
And look, and here's the issue, right? Because I think that barely any media coverage around something like this happening, which is actually a really extreme thing that's happening and is actually a real issue in the society. And, you know, everybody's worrying about this young boy that's, you know, I just think that sometimes we kind of get a little bit out of perspective about the things that really matter and what we should be putting our energy and attention to. I didn't realise that this was happening up in the Kimberleys.
Interesting. That's something we'll have to check out for next week, guys. We've unfortunately run out of time now. So, yeah.
Thanks for having me, sir.
No worries, Kamara. It's an honour to have you on board. And, all the best for the future and all the best for UK.
Yes, thank
and the
you.
Accelerate program. I think you're going to have a blast.
All right, darling.
You're on Urban Dreaming, guys. This is Joy Radio. Take care and all the best.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.